This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconex. Uconex provides digital solutions and teams to brand CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like the Trade Desk, brands from across the world have connected to Uconex. Visit them today at uconex.com. And No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that Season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by the CMOCouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000-plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit thecmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the CMO Suite. This is Sean Halter. I am your host. The CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Holdings. We are super excited today because we have with us a guest. It's a buddy of mine who I've actually known for almost, gosh, I feel like almost a decade now. It's Matt Brown. Matt Brown is what I would consider a serial entrepreneur specializing really in the software space. We're going to dig into some of his background, a lot of the stuff that I feel like has been really interesting that I've seen with him along the way. Officially, he is currently the president and CEO of Thumbstopper.com and chairman of LotVantage.com. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Sean Halter. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I get my first and last name in there. So it's semi-formal today.
Yeah, absolutely.
You do your own podcast. We're going to get into that in just a little bit. But again, one of the interesting things to me is when we're under these kind of, I don't know, these settings, it seems a little more formal than, you know, when we're over at Waffle House and you're yelling at the waitress for not getting us our food fast enough or something. So is there a professional Matt Brown and then the Matt Brown that everybody else gets to see somewhere along the way, depending, or is it just it's always Matt Brown, depends on what you see when you see him during the day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, number one, I never yell at people. I mean,
of course.
Maybe the sarcastic delivery of some of the things that I do, is perceived as yelling.
Maybe it's just a slightly higher vocal range of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I never change my colors. It's, at the end of the day, I've learned that you can't take anything that serious.
So I want to dig into really kind of how we got introduced with a couple of your companies. But before we do that, I love to sometimes actually just dig into how you got into this crazy business to some extent. So did you grow up here in Florida? I don't remember if you're Florida born or not.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say I'm Florida born. I'm originally from the Midwest, and but I've spent most of my time in Florida. My grandparents migrated down here in the early 90s, and I followed as a child. I was very close to my grandparents and ended up on the west coast of Florida in Venice, Florida, Venice and Sarasota, and so that was my old stomping ground, I call it.
And did you move down here? Your parents and everybody else moved down here, or your grandparents lived here and you went and lived with your grandparents for a little while?
Yeah, most of my mother's side of the family is in Florida today, and my father's side is all up north. So we're a little bit segmented as a family.
Yeah.
But
I think you almost said segregated. I don't know where we're going to head with that, but I guess we'll find out as we dig into the show a little bit. Yeah.
That's funny.
Brothers and sisters? I don't remember.
Yeah, I have two sisters and one brother.
And they also live here in Florida now, or they live all over the place?
They, two of them are in Florida and one of them is in the Midwest.
Yeah. On speaking terms with most of them, most of the time, hopefully along the way?
Yeah. Who isn't on speaking terms with their siblings?
I don't know. It's crazy. You know, I've got twins, which some of our listeners know. One of the most interesting or funny stories for me was when they were born, we were at the nurse's office one day and the nurse said, "Oh, you've got twins. I've got a twin brother." And we were like, "Oh, that's great. Are you close with him?" And she said, "No, we don't talk." And we were like, "Ha ha ha." And she's like, "No, yeah, we really don't talk."
Oh,
and I was
wow.
like, "Oh my God, I've got babies and this is what you're telling me?"
Yeah, I've got
to look forward to.
We've got a person I work with here at work and they've had a falling out with one of their siblings. And I'm like, it doesn't equate with me. And I don't always agree with what my brothers and sisters
sure.
want to do, but at the end of the day, they're my brother and sister. So
it's family that sometimes is critical, I think, in this industry, and certainly, you know, you're part of this industry to some extent. You hope that what you're doing this for, in some ways, is your family. We all work hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
This doesn't get any easier. I don't know anybody that's in anything having to do with marketing or advertising or anything in the space that just says, man, this has gotten so much easier than it was, you know, five or 6 years. It just gets harder and harder. And there's certainly days when all of us.
And it's a young man's sport today, the technology game.
It is.
Yeah. It's like, it's like pro athletes that, you know, these guys are retiring at 45 years old. So I'm past retirement.
You know, that's a great analogy. I don't mind actually sticking on that to some extent. You know me, I'm not a sports guy at all. Anytime somebody uses a sports analogy, I'm slightly confused by it, but there's a lot about sports that does relate to everything in life. The fact that it's an old man or an old, you know, it's a young person's game to some extent. You know, we've been to a bunch of events and sometimes we call these the guys in the blue coats. And so what you see is you see all these people, you're at maybe the National Association of Broadcasters or something like that. You see all these people that are sitting in all the sessions and all the seminars and they're, you know, super soaked in about finding out what's happening. And then you see like five or six guys in blue coats that are kind of standing towards the back. And really all they're trying to do is just wait it out. You know, they're just trying to see, can I work, you know, the next 2 years and just not have to learn all of this.
A lot of pro teams have problems because they've got guys on the payroll that haven't played in, you know, 8 to 10 years. And so you see some of these young teams that don't get into long-term contracts. And I'm not a sports guy either, but to back up just a little bit, I mean, you know, the, with both business and family, you know, and everything else and not talking to siblings, and you had made picture of it with the waiting on something at Waffle House. You know, at the end of the day, I feel like I'm a guy that really tells people. Sometimes I always say it, sometimes the truth isn't nice, but I like facts and the truth because then you get to solutions. And the technology business, you know, not getting any easier. You know, it's people haven't gotten any easier. Technology hasn't really changed, but the amount of, you know, people that it takes to get on a team rowing parallel, because I can't do it alone. I mean, I tell my people all the time, I can't do any of this without you. You saw just recently where, you know, I was stumbling around in marketing a little bit, and it's a whole different sport than operations. And you know, you're in the marketing side of the business. It's a whole different, you know, accounting, you know, operations, even sales. You can put methodologies in place, but the game that you're in is like technology, and marketing is changing so fast. And, you know, understanding all the nuances and, you know, being able to translate through the data, you know, it's full circle, but it's certainly like being an athlete. And the older you get, the harder this game gets. But the hard part of the game is motivating people correctly. And you try to give people exactly, you know, what they want. And the methodology I've always had is make sure the people have exactly what they want. Usually I'll get what I want out of it then. And today that's the cultural, you know, change that's happened with people and the influx of millennials into the workforce has something's changed over the last 5 or 6 years and a switch has been, flipped and, it's a whole different sport today.
Yeah. And I want to make sure that we spend a little time and we've got some time today. It's again, the beauty of a podcast is we try to keep these about a half an hour. We've done some a little bit longer. We've certainly done some a little bit shorter.
This one's going to be tough to jam into 30 minutes with you and I.
Between you and I talking. Did you see how quiet I was sitting through that part?
I couldn't believe it.
Well, we're in your studio, so I'm trying to be, you know, deferential. You were kind enough to loan us out your studio. We're recording today at Thumbstopper Studio for us. Again, it's
Mikasa Su Casa.
You guys know we produce a lot of our shows out of New York. iHeart Studios there. We had an opportunity to come and actually use Matt's studio. And I think to me, that's one of the kind of cool blessings about the podcast industry in general. We've got, you know, another guest that's going to be coming in this afternoon as well for an upcoming episode is, you know, you were one of those people 2 years ago where you were like, you hate marketing, but you're anti-marketing to some extent. And I think some of that bluster that you put out there is more based on the fact that there's a lot of bullshit that gets wrapped up into it. You live in a very, I don't want to say analytical world, but you know that if you go from point A and you push over to point B, that those two things are supposed to line up. It's hard to do that sometimes in marketing, but it's great to see your transformation over the last few years.
Well, thank you.
You don't have a cough dump button yet, you know, but we'll get you one of those.
No, I don't need the cough. You know, this,
but that's, you have a beautiful studio.
I've always said, thank you. And number one, it feels good that you're here and I'm glad you use it and you can use it anytime you want to use it. I feel like we kind of made the investment and we've talked about locally for people who want to start a podcast. And I've worked with a couple of the NFL players who want to start podcasts, and in season two, we're going to get into that of Brown on Brand. But the, you're exactly right. And hate's a rough word, right? And I can remember my grandmother when I was very early on, when I used that word, she'd say, Matthew, we don't care for, right, instead of hate. So with the word hate, I don't hate anything or anybody. However, marketing has been challenging.
It is. And
it's not just the change of marketing. The frustration that I had is we never really had the revenues to put the focus on that. And as you're building technology companies, they're so stack heavy with labor and the front investment part of it that marketing automatically gets neglected. I'm working on this synopsis from Mark Vitello on this getting over.
He's a buddy of yours and an investor in your company.
Yeah, itself. And a buddy of yours.
I know him as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. And the sales chasm of getting the early beta, they call it, and getting customers on a platform of a technology that you've built that's new is, you know, a challenge in itself. But what the real challenge is getting the early majority. And the early majority of a vertical or a group of, businesses, and we've focused on the motor space, you know, primarily, but as you know, we've reached way outside that now into retail and even things like firearms and farm and garden, you know, et cetera. But it takes marketing to get that early adoption. And there's no, you know, I've seen companies do it where they can penetrate it through guerrilla type warfare in sales. And we did it with LotVantage for years. But really, when you start to fundamentally figure out marketing, you know, things change. As you know, incoming leads, people that are interested in about your business because they heard about it versus a sales guy that's cold calling them, it's night and day. And that,
well,
go ahead.
No, the only thing I think I was going to say to that is, you know, marketing to marketers is one of the toughest things to do out there. You know, when you were, you know, when you've built these other companies.
I hired a ton of agencies. And let me tell you something. I would say that 75% of the agencies out there are, they have a methodology in place. And when you have a enterprise software business, sometimes those methodologies don't work. As you know, like you're working on some stuff for us now at the enterprise software level. And, you know, it's very different than, you know, marketing a local law firm or a group of restaurants or, a jewelry enterprise or, so it's just very different
on the business to business
level is, it's so tough.
It gets tricky for a couple reasons. And again, I want to make sure that we help people to understand not only the entrepreneurial aspect of what you've done, but specifically the thumb stopper concept itself and how that's really been introducing to some extent a lot of content development. You know, every marketer that we talk to, every CMO that we talk to, every VP of marketing that we talk to, they know that content is king. That's not going away. That is one of the beauties to me of how advertising and marketing has changed from the days where you're just trying to sell somebody something and convince them to try a product to helping them solve not sell something, right? What do I need to solve? How can I get introduced to a brand? How can I understand how they can help me with whatever it is, whether that's on the business to business side or the business to consumer side. But to your point, I think one of the trickiest things for agencies with any brands is when you're launching a new brand, that's hard where there's no historical to work from. And that's hard sometimes, certainly for people like you that are an entrepreneur.
Pioneering a market that doesn't exist.
You're pioneering a marketing that doesn't exist. And at the same time, you know, when we pick up a client on the agency side that says, look, my budget last year was $2 million, but I don't think they did a good job with that. We'd love to think that we're amazing and beautiful, that, you know, the agency piece that we own. The reality is anybody could look at a $2 million media spend and pick some things out to go, well, this was weird. Why did they do that? But when you've never had really any kind of marketing spend, the hardest part sometimes is to make sure that you're giving good guidance.
A lot of the capital spend is going to be, beta testing.
Yeah,
finding out what works.
Yeah. And that's so hard. You know, it's hard for anybody that owns a company, no matter what the size of that is, for anybody, even people that they trust, to say, well, give me $1 million so I can test this out.
Yeah.
You know, the rub for us sometimes, a lot of times we'll just say no. We just won't take clients like that.
Sure.
Not because we don't think we can do the work, but it's because it's hard to explain the work sometimes.
Well, you dilute yourself too on things that you know you can make hay for.
Sure.
And really, you know, you're not going to outrun a reputation, and you want the reputation of your agency to be something that's delivering results and, you know, increasing revenues.
But at the same time, you want to take a risk every once in a while, right?
And so you have to.
You pick a couple people out, a couple brands out, and you say, you know what? If I can be honest and open and transparent about what we're doing, hopefully we can point them in the right direction. We can try to be respectful of the dollars and try to spend them as respectfully as we can to show them how this
kind of works. And sure. if you do it right, then it's lightning in a bottle. And sometimes it's not. You navigate from there. So let's talk about Thumbstopper for a bit. So
I want to make a comment though on the tail end of that.
Ahead.
So back to the sales.
It's your studio.
And, thank you. Back to the sales and marketing side of it. I've always found it easy to get on the phone with what I would consider a potential customer and come up with a pitch. And that's how our sales department operates, right? We come up with a pitch and then we pitch the pitch. And sometimes the pitch modifies as the list of services that we have expand, you know, but for the most part, sales is a direct parallel path to, you know, a transition or a transaction.
Agreed.
And marketing is completely different. Think about everything that you live in today. Not only do you come up with a pitch, but now it's like which creative and the copyright, you know, the written description that people are going to read. And then from that, they land on a landing page or a website. And then what's that say? And is it converting? I mean, it is a true science, you know, what you guys do on the marketing side. And I'm eager to learn more. Teaming up with Vaynerchuk and their group, that's why we did that. We want to team up with what we consider the hottest agency in the U.S. from a private standpoint. And, the things we're learning in marketing, there's so many pieces. So I got a whole new respect for the game.
Well, just even
you and then getting them to work together, sales and marketing, because now I have marketing people and sales people. And as you know, now we have a whole nother science of going, OK, how do you keep sales focused on sales where they're not going, oh, our pitch doesn't really need to be the pitch. We could be talking about this marketing piece. No, you stay the course. The whole idea is this thing's going to fill the funnel for you. So, you know, it eliminates the amount of cold calling you have to do.
Having seen you really for the last 2 or 3 years, though, start to really gain an understanding of that, Matt, you know, again, we've had massive national clients. We've had clients of all shapes and sizes. There is a beauty sometimes as a marketer to have somebody who asks a lot of questions and they ask a lot of questions because they want to make sure they understand it. To see you evolve from that to somebody who could sit across from me, have again, an extremely intricate understanding of how the levers actually work to the point where now you've got your own podcast, Brown on Brand, where you're talking to all kinds of different businesses and business owners and you're getting into the space a bit. You've built a fantastic and beautiful studio. And to me, if there's nothing else that you take away from that, it's the fact that you're learning that marketing
I'm starting to take it real serious. You know, I've been blessed with companies that have done well. I now have the money to invest. So in the early days, I was spending money maybe a little wiser in some capacity. But we're in the testing mode. We're the clients now. And keep in mind that I took, you know, $20 million worth of spend over the last 18 months from customers all over the globe. You know, so 6,000 auto dealerships, you know, another 5,500 retailers and 30, you know, major brands that are now doing social media and digital advertising with us and wanting to expand that. So I've not only had to learn it for myself, but we've been deploying it. And you've seen how we've ramped up the kind of the operations and marketing team internally. It's now my biggest department by far. You know, my marketing department went from maybe one or two people and not taking it seriously and help with, you know, great agencies like yours and other agencies and some not so great, you know, but it's transformed into that's all we're focused on today. You know, it's we're in for a land grab and the way we're connecting brands and or manufacturers and their retailers is it's working and we're getting good results. And, you know, social media, as you know, that's changing a lot of things. That's not the end all.
Yep.
It's not it's not even for some businesses, right, that are necessity, commodity type businesses. You know, how much lifestyle can you get across on social media and can you stop the thumb? Can you thumb stop these people?
Which is obviously where you came up with the name itself.
That's where thumb stop.
How do you get people
from.
To pause long enough? So to stay on that topic for just a second, I think there were a few things that you said in there. I want to unpack a little bit. One of which is, you know, you built Thumbstopper out as an opportunity for brands to be able to generate brands that already have content that are out there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, let's rewind
a
little bit.
So use an example.
So Thumbstopper was built inside of LotVantage. LotVantage serves the motors industry, and that's everything. Passenger cars, trucks, power sports, marine, RV, farm and garden, golf carts, trailers, anything that has wheels and or motors, as eBay refers to it, the motor space. LotVantage is hyper-focused on that. They were hyper-focused on classified marketplaces because it was usually a pain in the ass to manage a lot of inventory on classified marketplaces like Craigslist yep. and eBay and now Facebook Marketplace and Letgo and OfferUp and the other half a dozen things that you see on TV. You know, the local, there's a Mormon Craigslist right now in Utah. Real deal. It's local. Yeah. It's got massive penetration for the local dealers. So it's changing so dramatically. And we saw that change coming. And a big part of what was changing is social media was really, you know, I read yesterday that the average American is going to spend a year and 7 months of their life on Facebook.
That's crazy.
Right? A year and 7 months. No. You know, you see the 153 minutes and you see the 2 hours a day.
Start or, talking you know, whatever years and it's a different number.
Yeah, you start talking about how much you're carving out of your life. So that impact, I mean, you know, let's not talk about whether it's good or bad. It is what it is. It's not going to change. Will it be Facebook? Who knows? Who cares?
Instagram, it'll be other TikTok, social whatever media. It is. Social you know, media is here to stay.
Right. Wherever the infants and the 8-year-olds are going, that's where the adults go. That must be cool too. And then they download the Snapchat.
We always use the analogy of a nightclub. You know, by the time you know what TikTok is when the younger people have already left. You know, it's not the cool club anymore. But to your point, then you develop
sometimes
thumb stopper from that.
At some point, those young people grow up too, and they all end up on Facebook. Statistically, that's what you know the stats are telling us.
So you had LotVantage, and then you decided to add the social piece.
Well, yeah, and so we're looking at social media and go, we have to start taking social media serious. And this is back in 2016, and this is long after I had conversations with you. I think social media is goofy to help small businesses, and it was early. There was nothing you could do on social media in 2016 to help businesses sell their inventory. It was just right at the brink of having the business manager and the advertising interface. And the main thing that I wanted to do is what I was finding is chances are if you went and searched a local business on Google, and that's what everybody does, whether they need directions or the hours or the phone number, you know, they start with a search, they look for a business. And what we started to see appear back as early as 2016 is not only did their website show up, but their Facebook page showed up. And so I started to go, you know, into some of, the Facebook pages. And what I realized is 90% of the retailers that had Facebook pages didn't have any content going to them.
Or not great
and
content.
That drove me crazy, you know, because I was like, wait a minute, we're dealing with 8 million vehicles. This is the same stuff. It's content. Let's ensure that small businesses, and that was the birth of Thumbstopper, ensure small businesses had a connectivity to content. So when people searched their business and landed there, if you landed at their website and you clicked on view inventory and there was no inventory there, or their homepage, you know, showed a hot dog fundraise from 2012, what are you going to do? You're going to bounce.
Yep.
And that's why the industry calls it bounce rates. And so I found myself bouncing, and that's where Thumbstopper was born. And of course, it's grown now to connecting the manufacturer's content with their retailers, you know, because they've been so disconnected. It became so popular. It grew so fast that we spun it out of LotVantage. And today it's its own entity. I've turned, as you know, LotVantage over to hired a vice president, you know, an operator. We call it a divisional vice president internally. But, you know, a president, Jim Jabe, to hire LotVantage or run LotVantage. And I am fully focused on Thumbstopper and my relationships with eBay and SellerVantage.
I think one of the interesting things about Thumbstopper, and then we'll jump into kind of where you feel like the industry is headed. One of the interesting things to me is, again, there's an automation aspect to it. I think for a lot of CMOs that are out there, again, whether you're the CMO of a massive group or you're the CMO of a smaller company, you're still trying to figure out, to Matt's point, how do I utilize social media in ways that make the most sense? And are there ways to create automation to this that make sense that don't just feel like, oh, somebody's just pushing a bunch of crap onto their social media page?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you guys have done a really interesting, you've built out an interesting technology to be able to kind of feed that in there in ways that feel seamless, which again, probably goes back to some of the early days of your entrepreneurship and kind of that evolution to being at a point with a product that really marketing can help and transform with. And I'll wrap that thought with this piece, which is just, you know, again, seeing you embrace marketing to some extent. I think that what's happening is you're starting to realize that you can only have so many boots on the ground. You can only have so many call centers if that's what you're using for calls.
Sure.
But utilizing...
We don't use call centers.
Great. Utilizing...
Never have.
Utilizing marketing can provide you a whole army of pushing out knowledge and understanding of what it is that you're trying to do and just help people to understand what that is earlier in the funnel process.
Yeah.
So that it works like a normal business to consumer funnel,
sure,
which is you start with brand And then you help work them through understanding not just brand, but then how does your brand interact with what they need? And then you work them down to the point where then you're not calling them for the first time trying to sell them something. They're either searching you out, or by the time you call, they've already been a warmed lead.
Right.
And it's a lot easier to be able to close that lead if you can maneuver your way through finding that audience and investing the right amount of money, then it does work.
You know?
A competitive space, certainly to some extent, what you guys are doing with Thumbstopper is different than what a lot of others have out there. But it's always interesting to see just the level of automation that's out there.
There are a ton of social media solutions out there, and some of the agencies have them, and they kind of handle them, and they're laborious, if you will. And the but to back up a little bit, you were exactly right. It's a big responsibility when you're connected for a brand and the retailers and what you're going to share up there. And I didn't want to be in the business of just sharing, you know, random things. And the first hurdle we had to get over is how do we build, you know, AI or artificial intelligence to know what should be going where? And some of it's very easy. Some of it's geolocated. Like, you're not going to have snow plows at Tampa Bay Power Sports, right? And snow blowers. And, you know, some of it's very difficult. It's depending on what type of inventory, you know, that dealer sells, and then what else is going on, on their Facebook page and what's been shared. And then it takes into consideration what other retailers are around them, how far retailers are. So the AI side is a big responsibility. The second piece was, as you pointed out, the ability to scale. We had to put a program together that when we connected to a manufacturer, that in 48 hours, as long as the manufacturer ran our playbook, and we give each brand and manufacturer a playbook when they sign a contract, and if we run that playbook, we get 85% penetration of their retailers, and we can ramp it in 48 hours.
Yeah.
So we put 550 retailers on a program that we're posting content through the AI intelligently, with the playbook and onboarding processes. So those were the two big hurdles you pointed out.
One of the things that I felt like was important, I'm going to ask one other question and then we'll wrap the show again. Matt Brown, CEO of LotVantage, a serial entrepreneur to some extent, has built some really incredible companies. One of the reasons why I felt like it was important to have you on the podcast this season is one of the things I'm finding from VPs and global VPs and CMOs at higher levels is they sometimes don't understand what's actually out there. And so they do have to rely upon these millennials sometimes to help them to understand, is there already a solution that's out there? Sometimes they'll invest. We had a client who invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into a DSP, a demand side platform that somebody had told them they needed to build, when there's 12 off the shelf products that could have been used just as easily, even more efficiently, but they got sold to, and there wasn't anybody there with either enough knowledge or understanding of what that was to be able to help them know, you don't need to build this, somebody's already done that. And sometimes when you're up that high, you're almost a little embarrassed to be Googling, is there already a product that's out there that does this? But I felt like it was important to have somebody like you on to help them all just to understand that it's okay to search sometimes to see if there's a solution, because there probably is something out there.
It's the reason I don't use call centers. I mean, we're trying to attract the executive level decision maker, and I need somebody, if we're lucky enough to get on the phone with that person, if we're lucky enough to get that person's attention via email, I need them to articulate a professional conversation, and I don't know how to train that in a call center environment.
Good point. I want to wrap with this last question. Obviously, again, we that half an hour went fast, didn't it?
Was that a half hour?
Fast.
Goes quick, right? In the studio,
especially with you and I mean, there's a lot that we could cover. I appreciate you covering quite a few things with me.
Is it only a half hour because the podcasts are that boring? Or
no, we've tried a bunch of different lengths. Half an hour is what we found.
I always heard a good sermon's 15 to 20 minutes. So
it's about the length of time that a lot of people are in their cars. And so it gives them the chance to be able to listen to one or two. Sometimes we've gone an hour. We had a few episodes last year that we went an hour, and I thought there was some great content that's in there. But a half an hour seems... Hopefully you leave them wanting a little more. Hopefully you leave them kind of saying, "Oh, I wish he could have spent more time talking about this LotVantage thing."
Well,
or
we could
what
do it again
100
times if you want. I really enjoy talking about this.
I want to leave with this. Who do you feel like is your biggest inspiration when it comes to just, again, waking up in the morning, you're running companies, and those get bigger and bigger, and those swings get to be bigger and bigger. You're not playing $10 blackjack anymore. You know, you're sitting and you're betting $1,000 hands. So there must
have been. Who's my biggest inspiration, or why do I do it?
No, who was your inspiration kind of growing up to some extent to kind of build that business acumen within you to know that you could do this?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, who are my inspiration? I got two teenage daughters that are just amazing, and they influence me. They're much brighter than I am. They're much more advanced than I am. They've had some of the things maybe I didn't have growing up, but they're a huge inspiration. But I've been lucky enough to be surrounded with good people, and you know a lot of those. And a special mention, Alfred Angeloni, and he's been just a. I don't know why he loves me so much, and he puts his arm around me and helps me with so many things. But I've got good people I can go to, Mark Fratello, and my board of directors, and internal people that I've had. I know what I'm weak at, and I've been blessed with good people around me that have, a lot of times when you're getting mentorship, you have to look at who's giving you the mentoring. And, these people have just been very good to me, and I've been able to advance and not make mistakes because of those people.
Great point, and good walk away and great way to end the show, which is sometimes we all need to be willing to kind of find out what our weaknesses are and admit that we all have weaknesses and find those people that can support those weaknesses and just make us better marketers along the way. Matt Brown, thank you so much for joining us on the CMO Suite, and we'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. Podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.